Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I'm John Schmelk. He's Jeff Fiegel. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513. We continue our season preview for the Giants as we go through the opponents one by one. And we have hit them all except for one. That is the Arizona Cardinals. And joining us to talk about the Arizona Cardinals is Darren Urban. He writes about the Cardinals for azcardinals.com. Darren, you got John Schmelk and Jeff Fiegel here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. How are you today? Thanks for waking up early with us.
Hi, Darren.
How you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. Good to have you on. And it's funny, I took a pretty deep look at the Cardinals. You look at where they rank in yards. You look at their plus-minus over the course of the season. They were plus 56. They were top 10 offense defense. Yet somehow they managed to finish 7-8-1. How and why?
That's a complex answer. I think there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. They had some guys last year not perform to the levels that they had the previous season, which is usually how it works when you take a step back. But they were key players. I mean, Carson Palmer did not play quite as well as he had in 2015, and yep. That might have been Carson Palmer's career year, but in reality, his receivers really let him down. If you got past Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd did not have nearly the year they thought he was going to have. And then, of course, he was cut late in the year. John Brown was ill almost all season, and his numbers dropped off a cliff. And so when you don't have those receiving numbers and the passing game kind of struggled, the protection wasn't as good as it had been the year before. That always doesn't help. Possibly the most glaring thing is that they had all kinds of special teams issues last year. They had bad snaps, bad long snaps when they're trying to replace their retired long snapper, Mike Leach. They had some blocked punts. They had some key missed field goals. They never did anything in the return game. The special teams really let them down. And if you just look at some of the missed field goals alone, they make like three field goals in three different games. They're probably talking about two of their losses and their tie are wins, and, right. And then we're talking about a totally different situation. So, I mean, it's like anything else. You got to have some things go right. You got to play better. The metrics said that they should have been better when you look at their point differential and some of the statistics they put up. But it also shows, you don't have a whole lot of margin for error in this league. If you make mistakes at the wrong time, it's going to cost you ball games, and that's what happened last year.
Well, we never want to discount the importance of the special teams, right? that's for sure. Well, we can segue right into there. I know it's not a huge topic, but obviously it's a need that they have filled and went out and got Phil Dawson. And really, when you look at the division that they play in, it's a tough division. It's close games. You got to have a good field goal and kicker. And, of course, Phil Dawson is a pretty good veteran. I know he's up there in age, but the guy's going to make field goals. So that'll be a good addition for the Cardinals. What about the impact free agents? You get Carlos Dansby back, Antoine Bethea, I think is the way you pronounce his name. Carlos Dansby, yep. Intriguing to me. I mean, he's 35 years old. I think that, tell me a little bit about those two free agents that I just mentioned.
Well, if you start with Dansby, I've known Carlos for a long time. I've been covering this team long enough that I was around when he was drafted originally. And like you said, this is his third time around with his team. He left for free agent riches back in 2010, came back on a one-year deal a couple of years ago because he wasn't getting the kind of market that he wanted, played possibly in 2013 his best season as a pro, and then got his free agent riches again leaving. And so this is kind of like the place where he likes to kind of come back and reset, I guess. And they needed a veteran. Darrell Washington thing is long past in terms of him obviously coming back here. They have Dalen Buchanan playing in there. They drafted Hassan Reddick as their first-round draft pick, but they wanted a veteran to be able to kind of man the middle. And it'll be very intriguing to me to where Carlos is in his career. I mean, obviously, you mentioned his age. He's not young. But if there's one thing that Lowe's has, it's confidence in himself, talking about how he – most certainly is still a three-down linebacker. He definitely believes he can do that. And with Dalen Buchanan having some ankle surgery in the offseason, and it'll probably delay the start of the season at least a little, or at least training camp, he's a good guy to have in there teaching Reddick at that inside linebacker core. And then when you talk about Buffet, I think they wanted more leadership in the secondary. You know, I think one of the things that set them back a little bit last year was they had lost some leaders from the year before, and it never kind of came together. And when you put that together with maybe too much confidence after their NFC Championship game, I mean, they were a favorite for a lot of people going into last year, and I think management wanted to kind of reset that, and that's what Buffet does, give you some leadership back there. You lose a couple of safeties in DJ Swearinger and Tony Jefferson in free agency, and you bring in Buffet, who can kind of slow things down. He's got a long history with Bruce Arians, and I think Bruce Arians really trusts him in the locker room.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about some of the losses on defense, Swearinger, Jefferson, and, of course, Calais Campbell. Those are three guys that I'm not going to be – Calais Campbell's certainly the backbone of that defense. How do the Cardinals – continue this stretch of really excellent defensive teams, which they've had for the last few years, losing such important veterans?
Well, I mean, you start with Calais. I mean, that's one you don't want to lose. There's no question about that. But Steve Keim, the general manager, and the way they run this team, you know, they definitely take that look, and there's other teams like this that say we'd rather lose a guy a little bit early and not pay him so much money that when he starts to fall off, we're overpaying for not enough production. We'd rather lose him early than late. And I think that's where the Calais Campbell thing came in. He's already 30. They knew he was going to get a lot of money on the open market, and so did Calais and his agent. And they just decided that it wasn't going to be worth it. And obviously, you know, Jacksonville decided to make Calais Campbell one of the highest-paid free agents out there. So they made that decision. They feel like they drafted Robert Kambici number one last year as a possible, you know, guy to drop in there. Obviously, Kambici did not have the kind of rookie season they wanted, but they feel like they've collected a lot of defensive linemen that, while none of them may be the star potential of Calais Campbell or Campbell was, that they can do things on a rotational basis that, as a group, they'll be okay. And then when you talk about losing guys like Swearinger and Jefferson, you know, number one, you're hoping Tyrann Mathieu returns to where he was. I mean, last year was kind of a lost year for Tyrann. He obviously blew out his knee at the end of 2015, and you're expecting him to jump back in the lineup now that he's had this all this time to get the knee right, to get back to where he was playing in 2015. And if that happens, I think you're a lot less concerned about where you are with Jefferson and Swearinger. I mean, both of those guys, Tony Jefferson especially, turned into very good players while they're playing for the Cardinals. But when you look at where they came from, Tony Jefferson was an undrafted rookie. DJ Swearinger, when they signed him, he'd already been cut by two teams, and when they originally signed him, he was actually on the practice squad for a week before they put him on the roster. So they feel like they can find guys and find for the right fit, and I think depth-wise, that's where they're kind of look. Like you mentioned before, they signed Buffet, but I think the key to that secondary is going to be Tyrann Mathieu, and if he plays like he's capable – they also spent a second-round pick on safety Buda Baker. I think they feel like they'll be okay in the secondary.
Well, I think that, you know, when you look at the Cardinals on paper and you look at their defense and some of the statistics that they had in 2016, certainly that is the backbone of their team. And if Mathieu's, if he's the one that can play healthy and stay healthy, I think that makes that defense just as good as they were last year. I was looking at some of the, you know, the battles that are going to be going on in camp, and it's intriguing to me that, you know, at the quarterback position, we know that Carson Palmer is your guy, but there's going to be a nice little competition for that second backup position between Blaine Gabbert, who they brought in free agency, and, of course, Drew Stanton, who's been there and played little games last year. Talk a little bit about that, and also, you know, what other position battle you feel is going to be one to watch during training camp this season?
Well, if you start with the backup quarterback role, I'll be very interested to see where Gabbert kind of fits in all this. I know a lot of people kind of see Gabbert coming in and possibly challenging Drew Stanton. I don't think people should underestimate the both the loyalty and the belief that Bruce Arians has in Drew Stanton. I mean, Drew Stanton was the guy that Bruce Arians wanted as his starter before they were able to make the trade for Carson Palmer back in 2013. And Bruce Arians has said multiple times that, you know, if Palmer happens to retire after this season, he'd be comfortable having Drew Stanton as his short-term starting quarterback. Now, there's a lot of things that go into it, and Bruce Arians has to work with the front office and make all these decisions. But I still think that when all is said and done, Drew Stanton is going to be the number two quarterback. Now, the question to me is, does Blaine Gabbert show them enough to keep him around for a year so that if Carson Palmer happens to retire after this season, you know, do you have Gabbert around as a possible, another potential bridge guy like a Stanton who's already around, or do you decide you're only going to keep two quarterbacks on the roster? I think that's, to me, where that battle shakes out in training camp. And in terms of the other battles, you know, the first thing that they've got a couple places where you're going to be looking, but I think the top place that most people are going to be watching is the cornerback spot on the other side of Patrick Peterson. You know, they have Justin Bethel there. He's the guy who currently is kind of penciled in there, but he was disappointing the last couple of years. He was playing basically on a broken foot. It didn't work out very well. They had Marcus Cooper there last year, who they got in a trade, and he ended up having a pretty good season, but he got a big free agent deal in Chicago. So it's Bethel. It could be Brandon Williams, who was their third-round pick last year, who started the season and did not play very well. He's still very raw. He was mostly a running back in college, so he's still learning this spot. Or, you know, at some point in training camp, do they sign a veteran or trade for somebody like they did with Cooper last year? I think that's the position that's really the most up in the air, I think, going into camp.
In terms of the offense, you mentioned Carson Palmer, and I agree. I think a big difference between the 2015 Cardinals that went to the NFC Championship game, and frankly, I thought was a better team than the Panthers. They just didn't happen to play a good game on that particular day against Carolina. And the team last year was the performance of Carson Palmer. How much of that do you think was a regression to the mean for Palmer based on his career? How much was it shaky protection on the offensive line? I know you already mentioned the receivers before. What do you think the chances are that Palmer does a little bit better job protecting the ball this year? I think the interceptions last year really did hurt the offense a little bit.
Right. Well, he had a couple of games where the interceptions really just smacked him in the face. I mean, when they got smoked in Buffalo, I don't even think he had thrown an interception. That was the third game of the year, and I don't think he had thrown an interception up until like the fourth quarter of that game. And then he threw four fourth quarter interceptions as they were trying to come back, and a couple of them were forced, and a couple of them were really bad routes and mistakes by receivers. And you know, I think that was kind of the microcosm of where they went off the rails last year in week three. But you know, all those things you mentioned, I mean, clearly Palmer has thrown his share of interceptions over his career.
Sure.
That's something he's always trying to pay attention to. And you know, I think that's something that he's got to be careful about. But, you know, the protection, I mean, I looked at some point at the games where he got sacked two times or less, and that's not nothing, getting sacked a couple times. He had really good numbers. And in the times he got sacked three times or more, it was bad. And he got sacked three times or more way too often last year. His sacks were way up last year compared to the year before. So
yeah,
the protection has to get better. And like you said, you know, the receivers, they've got to get better production out there. I mean, they you know, John Brown's got to get back to where he was in 2015. And again, like I said, the Michael Floyd thing, they were counting on a huge year for him. He was going into free agency, and I'm not sure what happened there.
Well, you know what? This is so typical because, you know, you start talking about the Cardinals, you're talking about Carson Palmer and Bruce Arians and all the other guys. And here we've been talking for 15 minutes. We have not even mentioned my guy, David Johnson.
Yeah.
I mean,
top three running back in the league.
I mean, this guy continues to. This is the story of David Johnson. He just never gets the recognition that he deserves.
True.
And so, I mean, when you talk about watching him and the way he runs the football and how important he is to that football team, we know that David Johnson's the guy. Just doing a little research on the running back position, there is another, I guess, you know, a big competition coming into camp of who's going to be that second guy. But, you know, talk from a guy that's out there in Arizona that sees David Johnson all the time. Let us know a little bit about what makes this guy so special, because he is fun to watch.
It is amazing, and it's funny, Jeff, because you know I'm putting up the next couple of days like a couple part thing articles about the top 10 questions going into camp, and none of them mention David Johnson. And there's a part of me that says, how do you do, you know, this big, long, essentially camp preview and two articles and not mention David Johnson? But he's not a question. And so it's almost at this point out here, you're taking what he's going to give you for granted to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all of a sudden, and I know it's kind of the dead time, and he's doing some interviews, but, you know, there's talk about, you know, can he get to 1,000, which he pushed a little bit last year, and they were trying to get in that last game, but, you know, can he get there? And the fact that we're even talking about that, the fact that we're talking about that being a legit goal for this guy, I think says a lot about him. I mean, when they drafted David Johnson, you know, and I don't know how many people know the story outside Arizona, but it was chronicled in All or Nothing. When they drafted David Johnson, they were trying to draft Amir Abdullah in the second round that year. And they were actually on the phone with Abdullah telling him they're going to pick him when the Lions picked them one slot before them.
Wow.
They were disappointed. They went with Marcus Golden, the linebacker, in the second round instead, which that also has turned out to be amazingly.
He's a good player. Good player.
He led them in sacks this year. And then in the third round got David Johnson. So that you know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. They get those two guys instead of Amir Abdullah. So, but to get David Johnson in the third round, I think there was a lot of questions about, you know, exactly what he was going to be able to do. There were things out there that he wasn't a tough runner, that he was going to have trouble inside the tackles, this and that, didn't hold on to the ball well enough. And all he's done is been spectacular from, you know, mid-season on in 2015 when Chris Johnson got hurt through last year. And he can run outside. He can take it inside. He's got this great jump cut, which is amazing. His receiving abilities are, you know, Carson Palmer thinks he could be a receiver if that's all he wanted to do. And actually, David Johnson went to college as a receiver before they moved him to running back, and it looks like it. So, you know, could he be a little bit better in pass protection? Sure. But in terms of the production that he gives, you know, all these other things we talk about, this is assuming, of course, David Johnson gives you the kind of offense that he gave you last year. And I don't think there's any reason to believe that he won't, because he's that talented of a player.
Yeah, and no question about it. I mean, the guy does it all. And to get him where they got him, and it's funny, you know, very similar thing happened to the Cowboys. We interviewed somebody about the Cowboys a few days ago, and they weren't trying to get Dak Prescott. They were trying to get Paxton Lynch. They were trying to get Connor Cook. And all of a sudden, the guy winds up in their lap, and wow, that worked out pretty well. It's amazing how the NFL works sometimes. What's your feel for the expectations for this Cardinals team generally? They're in a division where the Rams and the Niners, you could argue, are kind of starting to build. I know the Rams have had the Cardinals numbers in the past.
Well, they got two new coaches.
And they both have new coaches. I know the Cardinals have actually struggled with the Rams. But is there belief in Arizona that the Cardinals can challenge the Seahawks for the division and bring back the clock a little bit to 2015?
I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, I can't speak for outside, and I think outside, obviously, if you look around, there's not a whole lot of belief in this team. But I think internally there's absolutely a belief in this team. And I think there's absolutely this belief. Now, you can talk about, you know, how much longer the quote-unquote window is and where they might be next year and who's retiring and who's not. But right now, you know, if guys stay healthy, they absolutely believe that they can challenge for the division. You know, they feel they should have swept the Seahawks last year. They tied the game at home, which they should have won. When they blew the chip shot field goal, and then they beat Seattle in Seattle, and every year that Carson Palmer has been healthy enough to play in Seattle since he came here, the Cardinals have won in Seattle. So they have a lot of belief in being able to go to Seattle and win there too. So they absolutely think they can challenge. Now, you know, I don't think it's unfair to say the Seahawks should be the favorite in this division. And the Cardinals have some things to prove after last year and their record, but the expectation in the building really hasn't changed. They think they can make the playoffs, and they feel like if they get in the playoffs, things can happen.
Darren, great stuff. We appreciate the time. Awesome information. We'll talk to you down the road, okay? We'll see you in December, Christmas Eve. I will bring the Santa suit, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, Darren, great stuff. Thanks, man.
Yep.
AZCardinals.com covers the Cardinals. Been with them a long time. Excellent work.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting. It would be nice there at least. Although it doesn't really matter because it's indoors.
Who cares about the weather? No one wants to be in Arizona for Christmas.
Well, no, what I'm saying. Well, you're right about that. I'm saying in December you're going to be going out to Phoenix.
That's
it'll be a little bit nice, you know. I remember going out there in that scenario. It is always nice to go out there and just, you know, feel the sun or see the sun. But this team is interesting. You know, as we do these breakdowns, and you look at the team, like and like he said, you know, they were just two or three field goals away from, you know, 10 wins. And, you know, so I think this division, you know, the Rams, all right, you know, the Rams are that sneaky team. They'll come out and beat somebody you don't think they're going to beat. But they're in a rebuilding year. They have a new coach. You got San Francisco. So, you know, this division in my mind is between the two teams. But I think this Cardinal team, if they stay healthy, especially on defense, can really give the Seahawks a run for their money. So
I agree. And look, I think the Calais Campbell loss is bad. I mean, look,
he's a huge gap.
And they're both their safeties. I mean, Tony Jefferson's a really good player. There's a reason the Ravens paid out the you-know-what for him. And DJ Swearinger's not a bad player either. So yep. I think trying to figure out that secondary, you know, bad safety play can kill you with big plays down the field. So, but and I know Antoine Bethea is a veteran, and Tyron Matheau's coming off, you know, the surgery again. But those losses on defense worry me more than anything else, to be quite honest with you.
How sold are you on Carson Palmer?
I'm not.
I just think that, I know he's a good player, but I think he's past his prime.
Agreed.
Arm strength, I just don't, you know, and I feel like the Cardinals are just, they're hanging on by a string at the quarterback position, you know, and you hear that term, that stopgap. I think that's exactly what that is at that position right now. And I think that's gonna prohibit any of their you know, getting to be that division champion is going to be the quarterback play. I don't think that, you know, yeah, maybe the receivers let him down a little bit, but I still think that he did not play well last year.
No.
Now, I will tell you, you look at some of the statistics from last year, the guy got sacked a lot.
And that's the problem. And that's why when I asked the Palmer question, I mentioned the offensive line, because he is not a guy. In a lot of ways, Carson Palmer is actually a lot like Eli Manning.
Yeah, he's gonna run if he has to, but he's not going to be great at it, but he loves to sit in that pocket.
And both guys, when they tend to get smacked around, you get problems.
Yep, they start throwing off the back foot, they start seeing things, and they start throwing the ball into the other people's hands. So,
And if you look at their numbers last year, Eli and Carson Palmer's numbers were actually...
Were they similar? I didn't get a chance to look at
them. I will bring them up. I mentioned this the other day, but I will bring it up right now, and I will show it to you. They were actually extremely similar. Last year, Eli completed 63% of his passes, 4,000 yards, 26 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, okay?
All right, 63-4.
Carson Palmer, 14. 61% completion, 4,200 yards, 26 touchdowns, 14 interceptions.
Almost identical.
Yeah,
we both, you know.
And Palmer's,
know,
I think, is a little older than Eli, right? Yeah, Palmer's 37 and will be 38 in December. Eli, I believe, Eli's 36, right, if I'm not mistaken?
35 or 36, yeah.
Eli will turn 37 next January, so he's 36 right now.
There you go. There you have it. The breakdown of the Arizona Cardinals.
And you know what?
One of my teams.
Have you noticed that I've had you do all the
teams?
Yeah, I love
it. Seahawks.
That you were formerly.
Yep,
I'm the Eagles, by the way.
Thank you.
So, you know, it's funny. I think a lot of people overlook that game at the end of the season because it's surrounded by three of the NFC East teams. That game, Christmas Eve in Arizona, I'm not going to call it a trap game because the Cardinals could be a good team, but that's one of those under-the-radar, really dangerous, could-be-a-really-tough-game-to-win type of matchups for the Giants this
year. Especially if they have to win it.
Exactly. And what if the Cardinals have to win it,
too? I know it's not a division game, but it's an NFC game.
Right.
And, you know, you're getting towards the end of the season there. See, the Cardinals, that would be their, let's see here. Where's the game?
I took it off by accident.
Where is the
what are you looking for specifically? I'm sorry.
What game of the season is that?
It's the next to last game of the year.
It's the next to the last. Yeah, yeah.
Christmas Eve.
Could be big.
Could be a very difficult game, too, because, you know, the Cardinals, they have a lot of talented players still. They really do. I do think the receivers after Larry Fitzgerald is a legitimate question.
I mean, Floyd is, you know, he's a burner.
Well, he's not there anymore. Floyd's gone.
I'm saying when he was.
Yeah, John Brown's there.
John Brown's a burner, but he drops everything.
Does J.G. Nelson get you excited?
No.
I mean.
No.
I don't see any
of these guys. Yeah, I mean, they drafted this Chad Williams.
Yeah,
you know,
but.
I mean, he's a rookie.
Yeah. And remember, three out of the four Giants' last games against NFC East teams, all of them at home. So the only road game, and of course they had to give it to the Giants on Christmas Eve, happens to be at Arizona. 201-939-4513. All right, folks.
That'll be not to add insult to injury, but that'll be the first Christmas Eve of your new baby.
I'm aware.
That's the life of being in football, Schmelk.
At least I will be back.
You'll be back for Christmas.
And
exactly.
At that, you know what? At that time, actually, we're not sure how we figured out the travel yet. My wife might have already taken the kid back home with her for the holidays, so she
that's
might not be
what's
home.
Gonna happen.
She might not be home anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not as big of a deal, but
that's probably a better thing.
I got Thanksgiving and Christmas I missed this year. Christmas Eve I missed. With her,
Thanksgiving is against the Redskins
on the road, of course.
On the road, of course.
So that's the only part that's kind of irritating from a completely selfish perspective, which nobody else really cares about. Anyway, a couple of programming notes. The app is back up, Dave. Is that correct? The app is working. All right. So
way to go, Dave.
If you're on the website, if you're on the mobile website, you can go to the app, and the show is now streaming properly on there. They're doing like a video transition from one type of streaming to another, and they were trying to get it up, and it looks like they did. So excellent job by Dave Dominic and our web crew getting that thing up and running.
A lot of stuff going on around here.
Yes. We are going to have to end the show a little bit early, by the way, because the web crew who gets the show up has to run into a very important meeting at around 10 to 1. So we'll be with you for the next 20 minutes or so, and we'll take your call. So get on the line. We have some open lines. We'll talk some Giants football. Christian in New York will be our first caller of
Christian,
the show.
What's up?
Hi, Christian. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Yeah, I noticed some people call about Kevin Snead and, you know, how they're hoping he's going to be like maybe a backup receiver. But I honestly think the only reason he's going to camp is because they want another actual scary threat in the return game again, kind of like what they tried to do with Trendon Holiday, but he never actually saw the field. I think it was injuries. But, yeah, I think they really just are hoping that he could be like that dangerous threat in the return game.
Well, here's the problem with Kevin Snead.
The same.
Here's the problem with Kevin Snead. I'm going to interrupt you, Christian. Kevin Snead went to Carson Newman in the South Atlantic, all right?
That's who Miami plays first game this year.
Yeah, because they want to have an easy victory.
Yeah.
So, throw that on top of this. In his college career, Jeff, guess how many catches he had?
I'm going to say 9.
He had 5. If you have 5 career college catches for Carson Newman, here's the thing. You're probably not NFL ready. Just saying.
Yeah.
And I do not believe in my research that he actually did any special teams returns at Carson Newman. So, and once again, he didn't really do a lot of that in the Springer. He wasn't back there catching kicks at all. So, guys, he is not going to be, or very unlikely to be, a roster player this year. He is a practice squad stash, play on the scout team. Maybe you turn his speed into something. Maybe you don't. He's not ready to be an NFL contributor on a week-in, week-out basis, period.
And from a depth perspective, there's not much room to make this team as a receiver.
Mm-mm. Not for a guy that had 5 career catches at Carson Newman. The Carson Newman was a food brand.
It sounds like some sort of a, you know, like cereal or something.
Right. Anyway, sorry for interrupting, Christian. You may continue.
Yeah, sorry, Christian.
Well, that's all right. That's all right. But, yeah, what I was also going to say is if they did feel like he was that valuable of a returner, you're almost kind of looking at whether you want him for that or Dwayne Harris to be less of a returner, but, you know, play all 4 special teams, which, you know,
yeah, but
great.
Christian, he's...
Yeah, but he already does that. He plays all special teams and returns.
And Christian, he's not a returner. Yeah. He didn't return anything in the spring practice. He didn't return anything in college. He's not a returner.
Where are you getting a returner from?
I watched YouTube videos of him returning, but it might have been like spring league for college. I'm not sure.
Maybe. I mean, if from the scouting reports and the stats I've looked at, I have not seen any returns on his record. I will give another look, but I did not see any of that.
I would go out on a limb to say Travis Rudolph will return punts way before Snead would.
I actually like Travis Rudolph to challenge for the roster because with how good his route running is, and I remember people from Florida State talking about how if they got him one-on-one with just about any college corner, they were looking for that all day.
Yeah.
And he almost reminds me of a Jarvis Landry type.
Well, I have him as one of the guys, this, like the sleeper pick for me. I like him a lot. I really do. I like his skill set. I know that he can play special teams, which if he makes his team, that's what he's going to do.
I'm sorry. He had one return for 11 yards.
Oh, he's got 11-yard average.
Oh, great.
But, I you know, it's Rudolph. I think that he definitely has a skill set to do different things, and I think returning punts is one of them. You know, and to make this roster as a receiver, you're going to have to do other things besides being a receiver to be able to make the team. And that's one, you know, that's one thing that I think that he can do well is return kicks and play some special teams. So his speed and his toughness, his work ethic, I like him to make the team. That's my guy. I'm going out on a limb. We gotta do that before camp, Johnny. We gotta figure out who our guys are.
We do. We have the. I'm off next week, by the way. So you'll be with the Tino next week, and Lance will be here too.
Oh, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. But then we will all be back in the building for the week that training camp begins, and that's when we can. Because all our shows will be before they actually run a real practice, so we will make all our predictions that week.
Very good. Very good. Thank you for the
and
call.
I had another question for you guys real quick. Do you think Harris looked a little less explosive last year? I mean, I know he's kind of the guy that's got little dings going on quite often, but do you think he's actually slowing down already?
I'm not willing to make that call yet. I agree he wasn't as good of a returner last year as you would have liked, but I'm not ready to say he's on the downside. I think a lot of that might have been him being banged up.
And he's a tough guy, so he's going to play. And so when he is hurt, he's out there giving it his all, but you know, it may not be enough, but I agree with you. I think his production was definitely down. Hopefully he's gotten himself healthy and going to be able to come into training camp and do well for the upcoming season. Cause he is, I mean, they brought him in, we were all excited about it. And that first year, you know, two touchdowns, a punt return and a kickoff return. And then last year, not so much. So, I like the special teams. I really do. We haven't talked a lot about, you know, the kicking position. I think that Rojas is going to be a good one. And I know I've mentioned it a couple times on the show, but right now the kid has got a leg. He's accurate, and it's going to have to let him grow into and when you get into training camp and in the preseason games, because that's when you're really going to have to, that's the only time you're ever going to have pressure on the guy. I mean, Paul and I were talking about this, John. Now, how do you put pressure on a kicker? In practice, you throw things at him, you line up, you scream, you hit the air horn. It just, you know, so you just got to get him a little bit of preseason work and see what he could do. And I'm looking for Brad Wing to have another good year. He really did well last year too.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call, Christian. We appreciate
it. Yeah, Christian, thanks for calling in.
201-939-4513. Folks, you do have a couple open lines. If you want to get in and chat with us, you can call in and talk with us right now. Do you think Harris is going to be the primary returner on punts and kicks this year again?
Well, I know he took a pay cut, right? And I think that, you know, that tells you something. I think it's going to be, you know what? I don't know. I don't know if I can make that call yet. I really would like to see who some of the younger guys are. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, aside from him being a good returner, he's a very good special teams player. You know, he really that's kind of a huge asset for him, is he plays all the core special teams, and that's something that you got to be able to do to make a team as a fifth or sixth receiver. You know,
yeah, absolutely, no question about it.
You have to. I think they like his experience and his being a veteran in case they do get some injuries at the receiver position, that they know that they. I mean, look at 2 years ago, his first year. Remember, he played he played a lot at receiver. They were banged up all over the place.
And that actually took away from his special teams play a little bit.
Yep.
Which you don't want to have, because that's where he
That's why you brought him in.
Right.
And he actually did very well. Tough guy.
Oh, he was a great gunner last year. How many balls did he down? How many Brad Wing's punts did he down inside the 10 or 5?
And
fantastic.
Listen, that's something you have to – that backside of the roster, we talk about all the time, John. Those are your special teams guys. So you just can't forget about them. Look at the conversations we just had about the Cardinals special teams last year, you know, costing him two or three games.
Let's go to Nick in the Meadowlands. He's up next. Hi, Nick.
Nick in the Meadowlands. Are you over at the stadium? Where are you?
I wish I was. I was.
Yeah, well, it's a little hot over there today.
Yeah, it's a little muggy today, guys.
A little bit.
I wouldn't want to be practicing today if the sun were to come out. You know?
What's going
but
on,
anyway,
Nick?
Hey, do you guys watch NFL Network at all or listen to, like,
Occasionally.
Occasionally. I not during the off season so much.
All right. This morning, he's got the like top 20 receiving duos, and he's got Odell and Brandon Marshall at 6, and I wanted to throw the controller at the TV.
Yeah, you know what? I saw that list too, and the people that they had this was Nate Burleson specifically, yeah, his list, and some of the duos he had above Odell and Brandon Marshall were ridiculous. Do you have it in front of you, Nick, or no?
Number 6.
No, but do you have the list in front of you?
I can bring that up.
He had.
I got it right here.
Jordy Nelson, and he didn't even have. Who did he have him paired?
Here's what
with?
They have in front of him. They have Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu.
At 5.
Yes. 4, Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant. 3, Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. 2, Julian Edelman and Brandon Cooks.
Yeah.
And 1, Jordy Nelson and Davante Adams.
Yeah. He didn't even put whatchamacallit in there.
First of all, how is Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson not on there?
There's
that's
7.
A good point. There's 7.
I mean, and honestly, I would put Dez Bryant and Cole Beasley above a couple of those guys on that list.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a
– I would put those two above Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree.
That is a ridiculous list.
Don't put any credence in that. That's just whatever. That's Nate Burleson's the list.
Well, he's a former receiver. He should have half a clue what he's talking about. No,
that's what I was thinking, right? But I don't know where he's trying to get at with that. Like, if that, like, this year, that's who's going to be the best duo. I don't know if I understood it right.
No, it's nuts.
You were talking about Vegas yesterday with the Raiders, and
yes.
I don't know if I've ever talked with you, but. My first 20 years, you know, I grew up in Vegas. I was born and raised out there. I moved here when I was, you know, 19, 20 years old back in 99.
Okay.
And, if they would have thought of this, you know, I've been a Giants fan since 86, since, you know, that run. And Lawrence Taylor and everything being my favorite player of all time. But, you know, Vegas is you see a lot of black and silver around. You know, like going to school and everything. A lot of people from California live in Vegas, so that would be the place to have it. But, I mean, I wish they would have thought of this a long time ago. I mean, because there's so many places they could have built this place. To me, because I did a little research after, you know, you were talking about that yesterday. And I said, wow, I used to live, like, actually for a couple of years right down the street on Alibaba behind the Luxor, kind of.
Yeah.
On the southwest end of the Luxor.
Absolutely.
And now the Mandalay Bay is next to there. And that's where they're going to build this, like southwest of the Mandalay Bay. So I'm saying to myself, all they care about is the tourists, really. They're not building this stadium for the fan, you know, because they want it to be right there off the strip so people from their rooms and everything can get there because – UNLV campus is so far away when you think about it, guys. I mean, it really is.
No, it is.
It's really far. I mean, why didn't they build it, you know, by even a few years ago, they could have built it out by the Silverton or something. But the Silver Bowl, where UNLV Running Rebels play, where my Running Rebels play, you know, on the east side of town. They could have built it there, and they could have had all the room in the world, you know. But they want to keep it right next to the strip because of tourism.
I know. Nick, we got to run, man. I appreciate the call.
Okay, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I know Fiegels is very familiar with Vegas.
No, I hate Vegas.
Oh.
I don't like Vegas.
My understanding is you have like a permanent room at the Bellagio waiting for you, right?
Yeah.
You don't like Vegas, huh?
No, I don't like it.
You love the hot weather. I figured you'd be okay with it. There's some good golf down there.
Yeah, I mean, you could get the same golf in Phoenix. It's the
same
stuff.
That's
it's desert.
That's absolutely true.
And you know what? If you want to gamble, you can go to the Indian Reservation in Phoenix and gamble there too.
That is absolutely true.
But you know, you got to go to Vegas once.
You do.
You know, I don't know if it's a bucket list, but you got to go to Vegas. It's just not.
And the Cirque du Soleil shows are actually pretty fun.
Okay, so I will agree with you there. I saw the O.
O was my favorite one.
Unbelievable.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So much fun.
Yeah, that was really good, and some of the restaurants are really good.
That food is very good.
It's amazing.
You mean you aren't like clubbing at the nightclubs or anything like that? No,
you know,
not your
scene? I'm just no.
All right, let's go to Ken in New Jersey. He's up next. Hi, Ken.
Hey guys, how you guys doing today?
Doing well, Ken. What's up?
Not much. I wanted to actually talk about the Cowboys and the guy that was on the other day.
Sure.
Also, hey Jeff, We don't need to go to Vegas. Us Jersey people lose our money in Atlantic City like normal Jersey
yeah,
people.
Exactly. Yeah. Or you can do it online now, for God's sake. Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable.
You don't even have to lose your house or leave your house to lose your house.
That's a good point. Yeah.
That's a good line.
It's
I like
horrible.
That. It's pretty good.
Yeah. The guy that was – I mean, I know you guys are probably friends. The guy, the cowboy guy the other day that was on seemed a little arrogant, and I guess that's a cowboy thing. But
oh, Mickey? Mickey's
that,
great.
We like
yeah, yeah, like I said, you guys are probably friends. It doesn't seem like that to you guys. But, I mean, I deal with cowboy fans. Half my friends are cowboy fans. Don't ask me why. The other half
well,
are Eagles
why,
fans. Which
they
I, yeah,
why would you
which,
be friends
the other
with
half are Eagles fans, which I can understand. But we were all born in, like, the mid-'80s. So we started watching football in the early 90s, and a lot of my friends are front runners and became Dallas fans.
Of course.
It happens.
that happens a lot, apparently.
Yes.
I don't understand how the Dallas Cowboys are the second favorite to win the Super Bowl when in 22 years they've only won two playoff games. They had a rookie quarterback last year, a rookie running back, that if either one of them gets hurt, their season's over. And half of their secondary is rookies, and half of their defensive line is suspended for either drugs or being arrested.
Well, Ken, I will play devil's advocate for you for your second. Who was the number one seed in the NFC last year, heading into the playoffs?
The number one seed?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, well, it was Dallas.
And who was a young team that, theoretically, those young players should improve in their second year?
Yeah, I get that.
That's where the ranking comes from.
I'm not saying they're going to have a sophomore slump. What I'm saying is, they're playing a winning schedule this year.
Only two games different. You know, the NFL now, with the where you finish, it is only a two-game difference.
Plus, the strength of schedule stuff changes every week.
Yeah, I mean, and you don't know how good the teams are. Look, Ken, I agree. If I was to pick a favorite for the NFC East this year, I would personally pick the Giants. I think they have a more well-rounded team. But, you can make the argument based on what happened last year why Dallas would be the team. I get it.
Yeah, also, I hope we not only beat them week one, I want to embarrass them. I want a 35-7 victory. I want to walk off that field just taking all the wind out of that stadium.
Of course,
that's all I got, guys.
I appreciate it, Ken. Thank you.
Yeah, you echo every sentiment of every Giants fan right there. I don't want to just beat them. I want to embarrass
them.
What's
the chance that was Dottino with like a voice changer at the Jersey Shore making that call?
Dottino! And what was his name? Ken?
That was Ken, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay, Ken Dots. All right. The Giants fans, I don't know.
By the way, I think the chances of a blowout opener in Dallas week one probably is not going to happen.
No,
by the way.
There are no blowouts anymore in the division games.
Dude, how close have these Giant Cowboys games been over the years? It's been
that's
like, and freaky things happen in these games, too. They've all been close.
And I'm telling you, The Giants Cowboys rivalry is so good. I mean, it really is.
No argument for me.
I mean, I remember when I was playing that the Cowboys are the team that I hated to play the most. Then it was the Eagles and then the Redskins. But
Here's the thing: the Giants match up well with Dallas.
They do.
Dallas wants to run the ball. The Giants have a great defensive line that stops the run. It's almost like the Giants specifically designed their defense to stop the Dallas Cowboys. That's absolutely
true. Well, they designed
it
two times last year, so that was a good thing.
And they held one of the best offenses in football. They held 7 points in the second game they played.
Not to get completely off subject, but I got it, just because we're going to be going into training camp.
Yeah.
You're taking next week off and stuff. I got to tell you, and I know we got to run soon. I'm really excited about this season coming up for the Giants. If this is the time when Giants fans have to be just really licking their chops at what's going to happen, because the offense is kind of, the additions, a lot of people aren't talking about Brandon Marshall. He's kind of quietly in the mix here. That offense, it's just the defense is going to come around. They're getting 10 of the 11 guys back from last year.
And Jeff.
I mean,
I'm always one to try to temper everybody.
Sure.
I try to say, hold on. You never know. You got this. You got that. People say
of course
I pour
you are.
Cold water on stuff. I just try to keep people level and try to keep people reasonable. But it's hard for me not to think this Giants team can't make a real Super Bowl run. The way they're constructed, the way they're balanced on both sides of the ball, if they can keep Eli Manning healthy, the offensive line improves just a little bit.
So if I had to ask you one thing, if I had to ask you one answer, where is it that has to – what is the one thing that you are worried about?
Offensive line.
Period.
That's one. And if the one thing that has to get better from last year, just overall in terms of performance, I think you need a better year out of Eli Manning.
I agree.
And now, I don't think it was Eli's fault last year. No, but the circumstances around it. But overall,
but
for whatever the
reason. But those two go together.
Exactly.
They go together.
You need a better overall performance from Eli Manning.
And I think you got to be a little excited about Eric Flowers' conditioning level, what he did in the offseason.
Early signs are positive, but let's see it on the field.
There's no question. But it's better than us sitting here saying, where has Eric Flowers been?
Correct.
I mean, at least the intent is there.
Correct.
To get better.
All right, let's go to Don in Connecticut. Don, I'm giving you 60 seconds.
Donnie,
go.
What's up?
Hey, 49-0. That's the score I want versus Dallas.
Of course you do.
That'd be nice.
Yep.
Yeah, I know I won't get it. But, you know, we have a prayer of getting it if all these new players on offense are used to the fullest. I guess one of the concerns I have is we haven't really seen Coach McAdoo put together a set of schemes that will be winning. I mean, too often last year they were predictable, even though they went 13-5, they didn't score much, and I think it was because they were easy to read. That's my theory anyhow, and I just liked your comments on that.
No problem, Don. Thanks for the call. Look, I think off of last year, I think the whole offense, you know, you have to keep an eye on, from the players performing to Eli to the coach. I think everybody has to get better. And I think Ben McAdoo would say that himself, that every year you try to get better from the year before.
I think not having a fullback last year threw a lot of things into the mix. 11 personnel we saw until we woke up and went to bed every day. We saw 11 personnel. I don't think you're going to see a lot of that. You're going to not see as much of that this year. I think personnel was a big difference why the offense went the way that it did. I think things will change this year a lot with the addition of the two tight ends, things like that. So we're all good to go. Oh, you had to get
it's
it in.
Express version.
Everyone's favorite game.
Dave's like got to get to his meeting.
Play with Jeff Fiegel.
I don't have a great memory.
22 NFL season.
28 and 21. Ooh, we
Eagles
could go
with the
we go to 30.
Let's see who Jeff remembers.
30 and 21
would
make be really good.
Of my memory.
Here's your host.
That was just so.
John Schmelk.
Here we go. I got three names for you today, Jeff Fiegel.
All right, Johnny boy, what do you got for me, huh?
Did you play
woo-hoo
with Kevin Smith?
I think I played with a Darren Smith.
Did you play with Kevin Smith?
Darren. Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith. Yes, I did play with the Kevin Smith.
There have been.
That's such a bad name.
And
Kevin
I will
Smith.
Count
That's like Joe Smith.
I know. There have been six Kevin Smiths that play in the National Football League. You did not play with any of them. Most recently, there's a Kevin Smith that played linebacker for the Lions. There was a cornerback for the Cowboys in the 90s. And I don't know who the other Kevin Smiths are. But you are incorrect. 0-1. Number
okay.
two.
All right.
Did you play with Derek Williams? Did you play with Derek Williams?
No.
You sure?
Yep.
You're absolutely positive.
I'm positive.
You win.
Good. You got that one right. Did you play with Brandon McDonald? Did you play with Brandon McDonald?
I probably did because it's one of these stupid name again that's going to be – no. No, no, I didn't. No, no.
You just said you did.
No,
you are incorrect.
No, I said I probably did, but I was going to go the other way. Because it's like – oh. we do not have enough time on the show to rebut that, so I'll take it. I'll take it. That's fine.
I jumped the gun on you a little bit. I'm sorry.
Those were some
that's
tough
some,
names
that's some
today.
Good names, right?
Especially the Smith. The Kevin Smith one was just like, I had to, oh, come on. I mean, I know I played with a Darren Smith. And, gee whiz.
Okay. Oh, you were on the same team as Darren Smith, the linebacker?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
What team?
I don't know. Don't ask me that.
Did you play with Darren
Smith?
No,
was he from Miami? Is that why I know him?
I don't know. I just want to play the trombone. All right, Feegs, good times.
Whatever, man.
Enjoy your weekend.
You
next
enjoy
week,
your vacation.
I will. There. I have a lot of work around the house and getting ready for the baby. It's not much vacation.
Just drive your wife around and on the streets of Newark, and she'll give labor in a minute.
Oh, my God. What does that mean?
That means a lot of bumps.
I'm not even all. Oh, potholes.
Potholes.
I understand now. For Jeff Feegles, I am John Schmelt.
Right.
Next week, it's the Tino.
You have a sick mind.
I don't know. I don't know where you were going with that, to be honest with you.
Bumps. It just gets, you know, it gets going.
At least let me go back to Brooklyn or something to go to Manhattan. Don't send me to Newark.
Well, I've driven in Newark more than I have in Brooklyn, so.
We'll see you next week. It's the Tino, Beto, and Feegles. Have a good one, everybody, before I get into trouble.